So here we are. It's Mother's Day, right? Everybody has a mother. Not everybody is a mother, but everybody has a mother. And so this day kind of touches all of us, but it touches all of us in different ways. A couple of months ago, we were sitting in a staff meeting, and we were talking about doing something different for this day, and we thought about getting a guest speaker and stuff. And it wasn't long after, in my mind, I thought about a particular person. I thought, I think this person would be really good to share. And lo and behold, when I mentioned that to her, she said she had something in her heart that she wanted to share. And so, we kind of felt that God was doing something here. And, this lady really is, she's been part of my life for many years, her and her husband. I'm really proud of her. I'm really proud to see how God has worked in her life and her growth. Terry Del Giorgio is just, she's just unique. And anything she sets her mind to, usually she gets accomplished. It's like nothing holds her back. And she's on our pastoral staff. She oversees our preschool. She's been a huge part of this church almost since its beginning. It wasn't very long after the beginning that her and Gary became part of this. She's actually an ordained minister in the Church of God. I can't think of a better person to invite to share her story. And let me just share this with you. When a person decides to share their story, they're giving you a gift. It really is. It's a great gift when somebody opens up their lives and shares their story. And so would you welcome this morning Terry Del Giorgio, please.
Yeah. Can you guys hear me? I'm all wired up for sound here. Okay, well, good morning. Happy Mother's Day. It sounds funny, John. Isn't that what Steve always says? I'm getting a little feedback up here. Yeah. Traditional Mother's Day. We always think of the cards and flowers and candies and gifts. And so I have a sample of a Hallmark card and what it said inside. It said, "A mother like you is a blessing, an angel in earthly disguise, nurturing, loving, and guided with a heart that's caring and wise. You're a ray of the brightest sunlight, helping others to hope and dream, showing your faith so beautifully that you earn God's highest esteem. Thank you for warmth and comfort. You're a precious gift from above, for God's greatest treasure on earth is truly a mother's pure love." Or sometimes, if you get a religious Mother's Day card, they always quote parts of the Proverbs 31 women, or children rise and call her blessed. But as I was thinking about this Mother's Day, I was thinking that, not everybody's had children, so not everybody's a mother, but everybody has a mother. So it's you that I'm speaking to really today, and not the mother, so much the mothers, but the person that has a mother, which is everybody. So I'm going to share my story with you and share my mom with you. I was born in Ventura, California in 1959. I was one of three sisters. I'm the middle one, and that's probably where I get my tenacity. I don't know. Yeah. I was sharing earlier that, when we were growing up, the big thing was to front seat shotgun. When you're in the car, front seat shotgun. Well, when my grandmother was alive, it was always, well, we're going to let Lisa sit in the front seat. She's the oldest. And then if it was my parents, it was like, well, let's let Leslie sit in the front seat. She's the youngest. But they never said, let's let Terry sit in the front. She's the middle. No, that never happens. It's always there. She's the oldest. So I had to push a little harder to get things that I wanted and stuff. So I just totally, okay. My real name is Teresa Lee. Sutherland is my maiden name. I never used Teresa. I don't know why didn't they just name me Terry? Because they always called me Terry, and it was Terry Lee. And then I can't remember when my dad started calling me Turkey Lee, but it was because my birthday sometimes falls on Thanksgiving Day, so we would celebrate Thanksgiving and my birthday on it. And so it was Turkey Lee, and that's what he always referred to me as, Turkey Lee. I rarely got called Terry by my dad. So we lived in Ventura till I was about 4 years old. My dad worked in the oil field, and first on land rigs, and then he would go overseas once in a while and come back and do more land rigs, and then eventually he was on drill ships, and so we ended up following him wherever the drill ship would go. When I was four, we moved to Lemoore because my dad was going to work in Iran, and he would be working 3 months on, 1 month off, and I attended kindergarten there and part of my first grade. And while we were there, first let me back up and tell you that both my parents had very addictive natures. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was addicted to amphetamines for most of my childhood. But her biggest addiction was my father. It was like a fatal attraction. She always assumed he was cheating on her. And so during the time that he was in Iran and we were in Lemoore, she had a nervous breakdown. She totally had a meltdown. And crazy things happened in our home. Things I always assumed we had a ghost living in our house because crazy things would happen in the middle of the night. She would leave us alone while she would drive the alleys of Lemoore, and she'd park out in front of a house just knowing that he was inside there with another woman when he was in Iran working. One night she bundled us all up, and it must have been 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and put us in the car, and we drove to the outskirts of Lemoore. I don't think the motel is still there, but she checked us in, and we spent the night in a motel, and we didn't know why. We went into the next morning, we got up and went back home, but that was just kind of the crazy state that she was in. We lived in Lemoore till I was in the middle of first grade, and we moved to Gaviota, and my parents partied a lot. They left us alone a lot, but when we were in Gaviota, they hired a 17-year-old male babysitter for us, which was not a good thing. He babysat for us for a few times until I told my mom what was going on when she wasn't there. And so then that ended, fortunately, for me. After we were in Gaviota, we went to Santa Barbara. We lived in a big apartment building there. And my biggest memory of that apartment building were the fights that my parents had and the furniture that got broken and the yelling and the screaming and them leaving us alone and coming home in the middle of the night to them being drunk and loud and all that goes with that. We lived in Gaviota for, I can't remember how long, Santa Barbara, and then we moved to Long Beach, and we lived in a motel room because my dad's working on land rigs. Despite his alcoholism and drug addictions and everything, he still managed to keep a job. And so he was working on a land rig near Long Beach, and we stayed in a motel room because we didn't know how long we were going to be there. But the same thing happened there. For some reason, it was a furnished motel, you know, where they had the kitchen and everything. And one night, we heard them breaking the glass coffee table. And just lots of fights, and those are my biggest memories of being a little kid. When I started the third grade, we moved to Carpinteria. We lived in 3 different houses when we were in Carpinteria. I don't know why, we just seemed to want to move. This one wasn't big enough, or I don't know. In Carpinteria, I remember my birthday during the third grade. I can't remember how old, 8 years old, 9 years old, and I woke my parents up early in the morning and said, it's my birthday. And they're like, oh, yeah, they were, of course, you know, still probably intoxicated. They said, your present is in the car underneath the driver's seat. And so I ran outside and got my present, and it was perfect. It was exactly what I wanted. During that time, there was a program on called Julia. She was a black nurse. Anybody remember that show? It was like my favorite show. It wasn't on for very long. And so they came out with Julia dolls, with her nurse uniform and all her little bag. And that's what I wanted. I wanted a Julia doll, and that was what was underneath the seat of the car. But that was the extent of my birthday that year. I don't remember ever having a birthday party when I was in elementary school. I know that my older sister did at one point, but it's not something that we did in our family. Even to this day, birthdays are like, it's just another day for me, you know. If you give me a gift, yay, but if not, just, you know, my love language is quality time, so if you want to show me that you love me, come spend time with me. My family's, we're all like that. It's like, don't get me wrong. If you want to give me a present, I'll be happy to take it. My family, all we did bunch-ups, you know, so all my aunts and cousins and everything, we would get together and just have a meal together and just hang out, and that's how we showed each other that we loved each other. We were in Carpinteria until I started the 5th grade, and then we moved to Madeira because my father was now overseas off of the coast of Australia. And we were going to move to Australia to be with him because he was working like 2 weeks on, 1 week off, something like that. So we packed up everything, put it in storage, and we went to Madeira to live with my grandmother for a month or so while we got our shots, and we had to get passports and all that kind of stuff. It's our first time leaving the country. And while we were there, my dad suddenly came home, and I remember it was a big to-do. Of course, my mother immediately thought there was another woman over there and that he messed up somehow and had to leave the country, or he wrecked a rental car or something. There was some, but it was never really talked about much, because shortly thereafter, then he went to, we moved to Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. When we lived in Dartmouth, that was like the height of their drug and their party time. We were alone all the time. I had stomach problems as a fifth grader. As soon as they would go out the door, I would be nauseated, and I would either sit by the toilet or I would hang my head out the window. It was, you know, cold there with snow and it was nice fresh air, and I would watch for their headlights to come back, which, you know, I was usually in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning before they ever got home. But I did not like Nova Scotia, Canada at all. And it was probably a beautiful place to live, but because of our family life, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. At one point, my dad had been with another woman, and my mom was ready to leave him, even though he was her addiction. I mean, he was her addiction. She said, I'm going to leave it up to you girls, and I want you to tell me, are we going to leave Dad and go back to California, or are we going to stay here with him? So we went into the bedroom, and we got the chalkboard out, and we drew a line down the middle, pros and cons. We're like, why should we stay with Dad? Why shouldn't we leave him? You know, and my older sister ruled, so we stayed with him. But that just tells you how sick my mom was, you know. And this was, now I'm in the fifth or sixth grade at this point. So my dad was, he was on a drill ship at this time, and it was going from Nova Scotia to the St. Lawrence Bay. It was going to the Mediterranean Sea and off the coast of Malta. And so we packed up everything there again. My parents were driving a car home to California, so they sent the three of us girls on an airplane. We were attended by a stewardess and everything. So when we got to New York and we're in the customs where they look through your bags and everything, you know, the customs officer said, well, what does your father do for a living? And my younger sister said, he's a pusher. And he was a tool pusher in the oil business. And so she just shortened, he's a pusher. And so for all we knew, he could have been a pusher of drugs too. I mean, he could have been selling. He did eventually start growing his own little marijuana plants in the backyard. But at that time, I don't know. So they sent us home to Madeira, because again, we had to get another round of shots and do whatever we had to do to pack up to leave for Malta. And so I was in the middle of sixth grade when we moved to Malta. It's out in January. And I attended an all-girls school, Catholic school there for the first 6 months, because that was the only English-speaking school they had. And then the following school year, I would have been in seventh grade, Talhandak, which is a British service school, opened because the British came back, and they actually set up their, whatever they set up there again. So I attended a British service school. But the nuns in that Catholic school, I don't know how anybody ever survives their whole life in a Catholic school. They're mean. They were so mean. I remember one girl in my class, to get back at the nurses, she faked throwing up in the classroom. She filled her mouth with orange juice and was in the middle of the class, and she just spewed it all over her desk and everything. Well, we all got to go out of class, so she knew that was going to get us some time out of there. But, I mean, no wonder Catholic girls have those reputations, because the nuns are so darn mean. So we lived on Malta until the end of my eighth grade year, and then we flew many hours from Rome to Trinidad and Tobago, or Caracas, Venezuela, is where we landed. Long flight. My dad's drill ship again was off the coast of South America. And we were going to go live in Trinidad and Tobago. When we got there, the people there are black, just like you're in Africa. Everybody's black, and if you're a white person, you are the minority, and you stand out like a sore thumb. And so they didn't have schools, for one thing. My mom would have had to homeschool us, which was not going to happen. And there was, because we were white, blonde-headed American girls, there was a high rate of rape on white women there. So they decided it was best for us to send us back to my grandmother's. So they sent us home to Madeira. That's where my grandma lived. And this was summertime, I was supposed to start the ninth grade, right? And I forgot to tell you, when I was back in Prince Edward Island, I failed the fifth grade. So now my sister, I was supposed to be going into ninth grade, and my sister would be going into, what grade would that be? Ninth, tenth, 11th grade. But because I'm smart, I took the transcripts that the British Service School had given me, and I saw my uncle's typewriter still there, and his typewriter eraser, and it wasn't like copies, you know, this was really, they typed it on the old time ways. So I saw that 9 that I was going to go into the ninth grade, and I erased it, and I slid that paper into that typewriter, and I typed a 10. I was promoting myself, and it worked. Nobody ever knew. My parents knew, but they were in South America. What were they going to do? I was already starting school as a 10th grader. Because I'd heard friends that I'd had there years ago told me that we don't want to be freshmen going to high school. You know what they do to freshmen? I was like, no, what do? They stuck you in the trash can. And then she told me, I'm like, well, that's not happening. 10, right there. I just typed the 10. So we're back in Madeira. And before I did all my transcript, you know, forging, my older sister got to go work in the tomato fields in Lemoore with my aunts and my cousins and stuff. And I wasn't 15 yet, so I couldn't work. I couldn't get a permit to work, you know. So I was stuck at home with my grandmother and her garage sales and church on Sunday and her snoring through the sermon, you know. So, but, you know, God, I can see God's hand on my life all the way through everything. And it was because, and I was mad the day we went to church that I received the Lord, but I heard that minister, is like he was talking right to me, and he's like trying to get me to come down. Well, I was too shy to go down. So I knew that when we were going straight home, change our clothes, and we were going to the grocery store. And I thought, gosh, I'm out of Dr. Pepper. I'm out of Red Vines. I need to go with her and make sure she gets those for me. But this day, I knew I had to stay home. And I'm like, Grandma, you go to the store. I'm going to stay here. I'm kind of tired. So I knelt in her living room, and I asked the Lord in my heart, and because I felt like I hadn't done what I needed to do in case I died, you know, I wasn't for sure, and that was business I had to take care of. And I just cried and cried, but I felt like a ton of bricks had come off my shoulders. The Bible opened up to me when I read it. It's like, oh, my God, this makes sense now, you know. I joined a youth group and tried to be an evangelist, but that didn't work. That's not my gift, talking to people. People always ask me, you're so shy. Why do you sing? How does that work? You know, and I'm like, well, talking one-on-one to somebody and like this is easier than talking one-on-one for me because I'm truly an introvert. And I would much rather be by myself. But God's been working on me for years. When my sister and I flew home from Trinidad and Tobago, my glasses had broke. I got hit by a baseball and it snapped them in the middle and I couldn't wear them. And so she was supposed to lead me, because I'm very nearsighted. She was supposed to lead me everywhere we went. We got into the Miami airport, and she said, look, Terry, she says, you're going to do all the talking, or I'm leaving you here. And she meant it, because she was that fearful. So I did all the talking, and she led me around, made sure I got to the right gate and everything. Let's see, where were we? We're in Madeira, and I just accepted the Lord and forged my transcripts. From Madeira, in the middle of my 10th grade year, my forged year, my parents came back to the United States, and we got all a bunch of shots and everything again, because now the drill ship was going back to the Mediterranean Sea off the coast of Egypt. So we moved to Alexandria, Egypt, and we started attending a boarding school there for Americans. They called it Schutz American College, and that's where I experienced my teacher smoking dope in the classroom. Bizarre, you know, that happened, but there was like nobody to govern them. We're in Egypt. Who's going to care, you know? And it was crazy. So we weren't there for very long, thank goodness. And we moved to Cairo, and we were there the longest. And there, I attended a international school. Saudi kids whose parents were in Saudi Arabia were there, and all different nationalities. There were Yugoslavian guys there and girls there, and all from all different countries. And their big thing wasn't pot smoking, thank goodness, but it was sports and track. And I hate running. And so it was like every time we turned around, they were doing another like little mini Olympics, you know, like, okay, Terry, you're going to do the high jump. I'm like, okay, I'll do the high jump, but I've never done it before. So there were three of us that entered the high jump competition. I came in third. I got a bronze. During PE, we'd always have to run the track. We'd have to run a mile, you know, every day. Well, I managed to fake a fainting episode every time. I'd get about halfway around the track, and I'd pretend like I fainted because I just couldn't. I just absolutely hated it. And a teacher would come running over to me, cool water. And I don't like gym. No, I don't like, no. I always got picked first, too, for teams when I'd first moved to some place, you know. Oh, get the tall chick, get the tall. She'll be great when we do basketball. And then they'd find out soon as I was, nope. You need more than height. So they were track Nazis at that school. We left Cairo, Egypt, to come back home to California. My dad's ship was coming right into the Santa Barbara Channel to explore for oil there. So we came back to California, and I came back to where I'd started from originally. And in total, from the time I started school until the time I graduated high school, I attended 13 different schools. And we moved 19 times by the time I was 16. And despite all that my sisters and I went through elementary years, you think that we'd be into drugs ourselves. We never experimented with drugs. My sisters are all born again, spirit-filled Christians, working in their churches, thriving, have great families, great husbands. God protected us. And I know that's because I had a grandmother, even though she snored during the sermon, she prayed for us. And I had aunts that were Christians that prayed for us. One day when we were back in Ventura, and my mom, because we hadn't been in the States very long, you know, we didn't have driver's license, even though we were 16, 17, my mom had to drive us to school. And we'd have to wake her up every morning to get her out of bed to get us to school. And so she'd just get to the car and drive us there. And then we'd get to school, and at the end of the day, we had a designated place for her to pick us up because we didn't want anybody to see her because she was always in her pajamas, mascara smeared. You know, she was very depressed, very addicted still to amphetamines and alcohol and cigarettes and all that. And my dad was lost a job during our traveling time because he took alcohol onto one of the drill ships. But this one particular day, she got up. We woke her up normally to get us to school. And when she came to pick us up, she had clothes on and makeup and her hair was done. And she had she was kind of happy. And we're like, what's going on, Mom? Did somebody die, or something's different here? You could tell it immediately. And she began to tell us as we drove home, and then later got home, that she had gone. Somebody invited her to brunch, and it was a Women's Aglow meeting. And while she was there, she rededicated her life to the Lord because she had known the Lord as a child, but had walked way far away. And they prayed for her, and she was instantly delivered of all her addictions. Alcohol, the amphetamines, cigarettes, everything. She was, and she had absolutely no withdrawals. And on top of it, she was baptized in the Holy Spirit. So now when she'd get us home from school, the Jimmy Swaggart would be playing with his old country kind of gospel-y stuff. But dinner would be cooking, the house would be clean, and she would be dressed and makeup on and happy and singing in tongues all over the place. And we just thought, I remember we had a conversation. It was like, what has happened? What is this? You know, alien abduction is what we thought. Because, you know, for 16 years, we only knew the depressed, you know, drunken type mom and dad, you know. My dad, of course, was still very much alcoholic and was for many years after that. But my mom was like super mom and into our lives and wanted to know everything we were doing now and what time we're going to be home and that kind of stuff. She's one of those kind of Christians that should have been locked up because she was very vocal. And now she's telling us, you know, when you get married, don't you dare marry somebody like your father. You make sure you marry a Christian, and you make sure you save yourself for marriage. Don't give it away. But my mom's relationship with Jesus and the Holy Spirit was so contagious that I wanted what she had. I was a Christian, but I didn't have that Holy Spirit thing. I wanted it. And so one day, coming home in the car, I'm asking her, I'm like, how did that happen? How do you get that tongue, that prayer language? And we pull into the driveway, and she says, this is what you do. She says, you just say, Jesus, fill me with your spirit. And she says, and then you just make a noise with your mouth, and he will give you the language. She says, you sit right here in the car, and I'm going to go in the house, and you sit right here in the car and pray. And so she leaves me in the car, and I'm sitting there like, okay, that was a lot to take in. And I look over here, and there's a couple guys that I go to high school with that are washing their car in the driveway just next door. And I look over this way, and there's nobody that way, but I look back, I'm not like, this is not happening here. So I go back in the house, and she says, well, and I'm like, no, Mom, the guys were out there. I'm not going to pray in the car when they're out there. She says, well, next time you take a shower, you can just do the same thing. And so that's what I did, and God met me there and filled me with the Holy Spirit and gave me my prayer language. And my mom was pretty imperfect, you know. That your Mother's Day cards, they don't make cards for those kind of moms, you know. Those are the ones that just say, Happy Mother's Day. There's no fluff in there, no, you know. But, you know, my mom, from that point, it was quite the turning point. Like I said, she became super mom. I would often come home from a date, you know, guys driving me home from the date. My mom would be standing in the front yard in her muumuu, making sure that end of the date ended quickly and she'd get me in the house, you know. My younger sister tells of when she was 21 or 22, she was working at a factory over in Lemoore. And she worked a night shift, so everybody would go to a bar and have a couple drinks before they went home to sleep for the day, right? So my mom knew that this was happening on occasion, and she wasn't happy about it. Because she, you know, because of her life, she didn't want us to follow in that way. And so one morning, Leslie says that she's sitting in this bar with her friends having a drink, and my mom walks in her muumuu, and she looked at her and he said, young lady, you get yourself home. And then she just walked out and she went on home. And I asked Leslie, I said, well, what did you say to the people? She says, I just told them, I got to go. <You know? laughs> My mom meant business, you know. Once she was redeemed and sanctified, she was making up for lost time.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. And my mom was even a worship leader, and I didn't know it until several years ago that her mother was a worship leader. And my mom didn't play any musical instrument, but she did play a mean tambourine. And so she would go to Women's Aglow meetings, and she would lead worship, her and her tambourine. And she was pretty amazing, quite a woman of God she turned out to be. In July of 2012, my mom passed away. And while she was in the hospital, she told us on her deathbed that she says, I have something for you in my lockbox, but I don't want you to look at it until after I've passed away and after I'm gone. And so we were like, oh, my God, what's that? What's in the box? Well, it was a letter. And so I have to take off my glasses because, like I said, I'm nearsighted, and those progressive things don't work for me. This is what the letter said. I'll read part of it. Dear girls, first of all, I want you to know that Dad and I are very proud of the women that you are, and it makes me think of the Proverbs woman. Who can find a virtuous woman? Well, I have found three of them. They are my daughters. I also want to ask you again that you forgive us for all the mistakes we made. That would be for your benefit. As your parents, guardians, we did a lot of wrongs. The most right thing I did was to dedicate you, each of you, to the Lord. It was very private, just you, me, and the Holy One. Always after I would come home from the hospital, I didn't know how much about how to pray, so it was a simple, Lord, I give you my little girl. Please take care of her. Sorry, I didn't mean to cry. Please take care of her. I didn't want you girls to be hurt or wounded in the way I know people could. Sometimes, as you know, because you are parents, that we don't choose our children's lives or what they walk through. Of course, if you are reading this, you know that I've joined your father, and we are with Jesus. We're okay. God is able to restore all the years, and he did. He restored all the years. The sting of our childhood, at least for me, I'm sure my sisters would agree, is gone. You know, all the neglect and all the things that should have happened as a little kid didn't happen, but there's no sting there. I think that everything that we went through, including being stuck in Madeira with my grandmother, God had his hand on it. You know, he knew I was going to receive him in Madeira, that little Assembly of God church. And he truly has restored us. And I believe he can restore anything. I mean, Perhaps you're that mom, or maybe your mom was that way, or maybe you're raising grandchildren whose mother is that way. God is the Redeemer. And I'd like to close with a scripture from Isaiah. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives, and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor.
I was thinking when we first started North County Christian Fellowship, I had some people who were gung-ho, you know, on evangelists and stuff, and they wanted me to invite this evangelist to come to our church, and he came with his family, you know, and they all sat on the front row. And so he introduced them, and even the youngest one, who was 12 years old, now is preaching the Bible, you know, and he's standing up preaching in church and stuff. And I'm sitting there, and I'm going, this is a perfect family, man. It's like, it just doesn't work here, you know. I mean, it's like, it's beautiful that you have that, but I don't know very many people that are like that, including my own family, you know. It just doesn't work that way. But I found out the longer I've been in ministry that most people are kind of like that, is that we may know how to pretend, but when it comes down to it, all of us come from such different places and have issues. That's why I did a sermon a few years ago called Ah, Family. And we looked at, you might remember that, and we looked at all the different biblical families and really what the truth was about them. Yesterday, I did a funeral, and when I got there and I looked at the people, the crowd that was there, first thing I said to them, and I said, you know, about 10 years ago I went through a personal crisis, and my life was turned upside down. And somebody grabbed my hand, and they said, come on, you need to do something. And they took me to the bowling alley, and they introduced me to bowling. Well, my father, he was a great bowler, you know, and he started me bowling when I was small, but when I became a teenager, I walked away from anything like that and never returned. And so... You know, there I am at the bowling alley, and I start meeting people. And as I stood there yesterday, I realized that I would know none of these people, none of the people that were there in that funeral. I wouldn't even be privileged of standing there in that funeral if it hadn't have been for what happened in my life that opened the door for me to meet a whole new bunch of people and meet God with them. So, I mean, all the things that have gone in to make Terry up. Her parenting, or a lack of parenting, and all of those issues have been redeemed and are still being redeemed by God. They all form that wonderful person that you are. And that's what it is about God. He takes the broken parts of our life. He takes the crises and the things when everything is turned upside down. And he uses that to mold us as we are, if we'll let him. We can spend a whole life looking backwards on all that stuff and feeling sorry for ourselves, Or we can offer this all to God and let God use it to mold us. And so then yesterday, I shared, I was wrestling because I wanted to be me. You know, I wanted to stand up there in front of these people that I know none of them go to church and none of them are connected really with church relationships and that whole thing. And I mean, I love them so much. I just wanted to take them from Genesis to Revelation. I wanted to sit down at a funeral service, you know, and walk them through the whole deal. But I knew that wasn't really possible. So I was praying, God, what should I tell them? And he led me to that story of the resurrection of Jesus when Mary is standing outside the tomb after everybody's left. She's standing out there weeping. And Jesus appears behind her, you know. And she thinks he's the gardener. Remember that? And so she says, sir, if you've taken away his body, just tell me where you put him. I'm going to go get him and take care of him. And Jesus looked at her and he said one word. He said, Mary. And then it just reminded me, you know, of all the personalness of God. I mean, you know, it's not like God knows our name. Jesus knew her name. And if you put all the other accounts of the resurrection together, I mean, it's like when Jesus rose from the dead and there was a group of women there. He said, go tell the disciples that you've seen me. And then he said, and Peter. Well, why did he say, and Peter? Well, obviously, because Peter was the one who 3 days before was standing outside when they were judging Jesus. And he said, I don't even know the guy. And to know that Jesus sent a special word to him. And then when the Apostle Paul later on is listening, at some point, we don't even have a record of it, Jesus actually went to Peter and encountered Peter. It was just, he had a moment with just Peter and him. And of course, Thomas, you know, that whole interaction that took place with Thomas. Thomas wasn't there in the upper room. He refused to believe. And then Jesus, when he showed up there the next time, Thomas is standing there. And he went straight to Thomas. And he said, Thomas, come here. He said, put your finger here in the hole of my hand. Put your hand in my side. Don't be unbelieving. Be believing. And of course, the Apostle Paul, who was Saul, the church persecutor who's riding to Damascus to go and arrest Christians, haul them off to jail because they were believers. And Jesus shows up on the road, knocks him off his horse, and then speaks to him this way, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Saul sits up and looks at the light that's in front of him and says, well, who are you? And he said, I'm Jesus, whom you're persecuting. And then he used these words. They're not found any place else in Scripture to any other people. But he uses these words. It's hard for you to kick against those goads. It was a personal word. I mean, you know, an ox goad, and that's the way that Saul was going about it. He's kicking against a pointed stick, and it's hurting him more than it's hurting anybody else. And Saul realized it at that moment. But I guess what that speaks to me is that God knows each one of us. And he doesn't just give a blanket call. I mean, you know, he's at work in each one of us. He's big enough to be at work in the little girl who's placed in an alcoholic and drug addict home. And be at work through all of that to create something beautiful. Someone who is so determined. I mean, you know, if you saw Terry work with our preschool and work with our kids and love those kids over there, I mean, you would just, and realize the background that she came from, her tenacity to do a good preschool and do it right, and her love for Jesus, and she's Gary Del Giorgio's wife to boot. I mean, I mean, you know, when you think about that, and what that does is that just lets me know that God, you know, He doesn't handle us like a big crowd. He doesn't handle us like we're cookie cutter things. He knows each one of us. He knows when you rise up and when you sit down. He knows the things that make your heart work, and He meets you right there. So celebrate Mother's Day. And if your mom was less than stellar, as Gus Bess would say, if she was less than stellar, if there was failure in their family, know that God isn't absent from that. He's there, present, working through it and calling people in the midst of that. Remember that moms are sinners saved by grace, too. And wait till I get to Father's Day. Let's stand together this morning.